When you know who you're after, your job is not to buy houses and look for tenants. Your job is to choose your tenant, and then you buy houses to suit your tenant's needs.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Atlanta Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I'm here with Matthew Whitaker. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
It's glad to have Matthew. We're glad to have Matthew back. And today we've got a special guest with us. We have Kurt Smith joining us from Atlanta. And Kurt, welcome to the show. We're excited to hear your story and learn from you today.
Oh, it's great. I'm honored that you invited me, Spencer and Matthew. I'm glad to tell everything and help folks both on this podcast and maybe in the future if anyone wants to reach out to me.
Well, I'm very excited to talk to somebody that has retired using their rental portfolio. So we want to find out all about that. But I think the first question is, I mean, why real estate? Why did you tell us how you got into it and why you chose real estate?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's a good question, especially if you have a maybe 30 years old perspective. I remember when I was 30-ish some time ago, I was going to the trade shows for franchise trade shows. And this was 30 years ago. And I would come away from the post office box RS booth, and they would say, well, typically folks who live off mailboxes RS, whatever that, they own five or six or seven of them. What? Because they don't cash flow that much.
Right.
These franchises. In other words,
there's no money in this, Kurt, but we want you to invest.
Yeah, right. And a McDonald's is a $1 million franchise. And at any rate, so that laid dormant for some period of time. And then I was just reticent to buying into something that was retail facing, you know, where you were depending on people walking in off the street and you're providing a transactional service. And I had a gut aversion to transactional income, and I still do. But then my wife and I started growing gray hair. And this is really the honest truth. The more gray hair you have, the more you start thinking about what next is my made for you by the federal government and your company retirement system going to work for you? Are you going to be able to have a decent life, or are you basically going to be cornering the market on refrigerator boxes? And so we thought about it, and lo and behold, it was one of these matches that was random luck. I ran across Wendy Patton's book in Amazon, highly rated. And I bought Wendy Patton's lease options book, her first entry. And she still is lease option subject to E. And I read that book, and my day gig was an engineer, educated as an engineer. And the definition of an engineer is you solve problems you've never seen before. So self-education, which is the mantra of or the bread and butter of real estate investors, going to RIAs, taking education and reading books and just learning how to do it, because, well, that's just the way most real estate people bootstrap themselves. And so it was a natural for me to read a book. And then it was the beginning days of internet. I mean, it was that long ago.
I remember those days.
Yeah. And there was a very early website called Atlanta Wholesale Deals or something to that effect. And people were posting their deals for sale, both fixed and prefixed. And being an engineer, your middle name is network. So I started emailing folks who put up their recent fixes in Norcross. Norcross was a hotbed. This was 2011. And I met a young guy. I says, hey, I know how to network. So I started off by saying, hey, I love your house. How did you do it? Can I meet you at your house? You know, classic. I mean, and real estate people are almost 100% friendly. Sure, I'll be at my house tomorrow, putting in the AC. Come on out. So I met this young fellow who was flipping and also fixing rentals using his dad's money. And he said, you ought to join your local RIA. And he said, Georgia RIA, GARIA.com. And I said, well, how do I buy a house like this? This is 2011. And because I didn't know that it was a candy store. And he literally spun around 360 degrees, standing in the front yard, saw one across the street and over one that had the HUD papers in the window. He says, that one. Oh my God. So, and I just went to HUDHomestore.com and he said, use my agent. He's HUD approved, and made an offer, and I bought that house across the street. And wow. Then I told my wife.
So there's so much here to unpack. I think it's ridiculous. So you basically bought your first house because a gentleman you met at his house just pointed across the street and said, you need to buy that one.
I did skip. I didn't embellish on the gray hair part. I did say we were thinking about what next. How right. will we live in retirement? My wife was a school teacher, and 2009 kind of drilled into everyone. You can't trust what you think is given. They were thinking about Social Security is going to evaporate, which we still are. And we're thinking that the pension funds for public employees was going to evaporate. Well, if you live in New Jersey or Illinois, that's probably still true. But Georgia, fortunately, hasn't evaporated. But when you have that mindset, it's actually an advantage. It's a huge motivator. And we had enough gray hair. And my wife is very astute. She's a full business partner. She was at a rental house with me today, solving a tenant problem, German roaches. Let me tell you, that's bad. Another problem.
That's yeah. not good.
That is. We could do a whole show on solving the German roach issue.
Yeah. Give me American roaches.
Yeah. These. I'm not sure how we blamed it on the Germans, but maybe it is an actual German roach. But my grandmother's German, so I don't, she probably wouldn't have been excited about us blaming it on her. Talk a little bit about the value. It seems like you know, being an engineer, you like to have questions and answer questions. Talk about the value of education before you got started. You got started with the Georgia REIA. For everybody who's listening, you know, tell them about the Georgia REIA and just the value of reading. You know, my guess is you still read a lot of books and invest in your own education.
Even now, we've done about 40, 41, 2, 3 doors. We've sold some. So how many doors do we actually still have? In the 30s somewhere. And we still take Dyke Spotiford's classes twice a year, Pete Fortunato in the fall, Dykes in the spring. But in the early days, there weren't that many books. So I read both of Wendy Patton's books, bless her heart, that she was an early book author. And then the Georgia REIA had boot camps. And then it was face-to-face learning from meeting people at their rental. I had no interest in flips or wholesaling, of course, is that aversion to transactional income was in play. Plus, both my wife and I are fairly well educated, me as an engineer and she as a teacher, that we knew that to augment our retirement income, it had to be passive rental income. So fortunately, in the early days, 2011, 12, 13, 14, you could buy houses that cash flowed easily. Now, today, that problem of do you buy for appreciation and break even, and then look for cash flow in the next rent raises. I know today is a different story than when we got started, but the whole purpose for getting started was to augment our retirement. And if it's possible, to not depend on Social Security or her pension in case they both blew up. Our goal was to have enough to live on without anything else. So that was our goal 10 years ago. Not so much written down, but we kind of dinner table talked about it. And we don't have any kids. So we have several advantages that maybe other folks don't have. We had two white collar jobs. We lived way below our means. We were savers. We had some cash, not a lot of cash, but we had free cash flow. And free cash flow with bankable, lendable incomes allows you to serially get purchase rehab money loans in the early days. So the beginning was we have to buy enough houses that we can live off them. And that is as soon as possible, because my wife also is a amateur medical doctor. And she knew that the body and the brain has an aging process, that your capability to work hard and to solve difficult problems rolls off as you age. And so we had consciously, we talked about this. We had a race, a time clock that we had to get this done as soon as possible, or else we'll run off the edge of our body's ability to work hard and our brain's ability to work. We're a little older than we look, and I won't say my age, but it was we had to just go all out.
Yeah, you had to get it done. No, you're like solving a lot of problems in my head for why Spencer knocks off at 3 o'clock every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering why.
It makes total sense.
He used to work hard.
Spencer used to work hard back when we first started 7 years ago together. Now, one of the interesting things I have found is that engineers are great investors. And one of the reasons I feel like they're great investors is because you're very process oriented. Like you follow the process, you stick to the details, you make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
Very disciplined.
Very disciplined. Yeah. So one of the things I would think though is that being an engineer, there's probably some anxiety to what I would call get all the lights green before you start putting your foot on the gas. Talk about your first deal and the anxiety around getting started. Being an engineer personality, I would imagine an accountant or a doctor may have some similar attributes as you.
I've met a lot of folks who are know-it-all. Educate yourself thoroughly before you take the first step. And we know that that's actually the hardest way to get started. Someone in Georgia who's part of education, I'll mention his name, Kyle Kofelt, coined something. I'll attribute to him, because I don't know who else too. He's very smart. Just-in-time learning is a fantastic strategy. And really, if you want to get from point A to point Z that involves multiple steps and complications, you can't educate yourself on the entirety before you take the first step. Well, for one, your brain won't hold it. You'll forget. So educate yourself on the first and maybe the second step partially. Just in time learning is a fantastic strategy, but it's very difficult for people because of insecurity, worries about failure. Mainly, I think when it comes down to it, it's worries about failure. Why most folks have difficulty jumping in the deep end, taking that first step and making an offer, making a viable offer where you have proof of funds and the ability to get the loan and close, and they just won't make that offer. But I did. I seemed to, without knowing this catchphrase, which I only heard about like 3 years ago, I was instinctively a fail fast person, not worrying about failure because I've failed practically every day. And tuition, failure, that includes a lot of zeros. My wife and I, fortunately, is very supportive. We've lost a lot of money. Most of the biggest zeros have been in the stock market in 2009. I didn't know when to sell. But all of that, we call tuition. And so I've got great support here at home for failure. And so we don't worry about failure. We just worry about how fast you get up.
Yeah, failure. I think everybody intuitively understands at this point that, and especially if you listen to any podcast on success, that failure is part of the process. But I think in reality, it's hard, right? Because you make some mistakes, especially getting started. You don't want to make a fatal error getting started, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it is, you know, treating failure as something as a tuition. It's what you paid. My partner used to always say back in 2009 that I had a Harvard education in the housing industry. And that is true. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars lost at the time when the market crashed. And so I appreciate you sharing that. Do you have any stories of failure that you'd love to share with the audience?
I don't want to say that I didn't fail. We're so lucky. None of our failures in real estate, now the stock market, different story, in real estate have been that serious. But one small story that still is burnt in my brain because it was such a catastrophic dumb move. I was a partner in five people in Georgia Rio, pooled their money, and we bought a mobile home park, a beautiful park, a beautiful starter park in South Alabama. As you know, any kind of sizable commercial deal is not going to be close to home. They're always going to be some distance away. And this was a half built out mobile home park. And so we were buying homes, putting them in, and I had the most real estate experience than the other partners, but I proved not to be, I didn't put enough focus on it. Anyway, so move the mobile homes in. I'm working with the installer. We get the power hooked up to the homes, and the installer was supposed to hook the water up, but I didn't go to the mobile home and eyeball it. You always have to eyeball never trust someone else for final inspection. And it was all hooked up. It was all supposed to be hooked up. We rented it out. Someone moved in and turned on the water spigot. There was no water. I didn't have the water hooked up. There was no water in this home, and someone moved in. What do you do?
And the home's in South Alabama.
In South Alabama. So I had the phone number to the neighbor next door. I said, hey, I'm in a bad way. I'll give you $50 and $20 a month. Can I run a garden hose between your outdoor spigot and the mobile home next door's outdoor spigot? Because if you shut the cutoff and you hook the spigots together, you're going to actually power up the water in the house through a garden hose. And so the next day, I had water in that place through a garden hose.
It's like being super resourceful, also a credit to being an investor. Do you know what we call South Alabama?
Yeah, South LA, right.
LA, yep. Lower Alabama, yep. LA. So when we talk to people from California and they say they're from LA, we're like, is that Lower Alabama or is that Los Angeles? And they always get a kick out of that. I had a funny story, Kurt, that I'll share. I bought this house probably, it was 2007, 2008. I mean, it was right before the historic recession. And it's in a super desirable neighborhood. Like, I mean, it was kind of like, I felt like I competed for the house, won this house, went in and renovated it, and put the house back on the market. And as I put it on the market, the house, essentially all the housing market is collapsing around this house. And I keep dropping price. I sold it a year later, almost to the day, like literally almost to the day. My net proceeds was the exact number of the check that I had brought to closing a year before. And I had put about $70,000 or $80,000 in the house, plus all the utilities, plus the insurance, plus all the carrying costs. And so the moral of that story is you can lose a lot of money and still remain viable. Now, the funniest thing about that story too is now I always swore I was never going to ride down that street. And now I live two doors down from that house. It's just ironic. Like no kidding. Yeah. My wife found a house. She had to have it. And it's two doors down from this house. And I see it every day. It's just a good reminder that you're not as good as you think you are.
Yeah. Well, my lesson that I think I can share with everyone is eyeball. And don't leave important things to someone else, especially an out-of-state distance deal. Before you move someone in, you better go through and do a personal checkout yourself.
Yeah, make sure. Go see these properties. Talk a little bit about your rental portfolio. Are there areas of Atlanta that you really like that you'd be willing to share with our audience?
Sure, anything. Unfortunately, the bulk of our current inventory is in an area that you can't afford to buy anymore. In 2012, 13, 14, we were buying of HUD Home Store and also Zillow email alerts in Norcross.
Unfortunately, but fortunately for you, nobody can buy in there anymore. You're the reigning champ over there.
Right.
Now.
Right. You got a tailwind of Norcross High School. So this was on the north side of 85 and north side of Jimmy Carter, zip code 371, which is one of the poorer, lower priced zip codes of the Norcross High School district, which you can't today buy good high schools and cash flow. So my wife, being a retired school teacher, she was a teacher then, instinctively knew to buy in good schools. And that's today is a goal, but in Atlanta, you can't afford to. And I don't think there's any large metropolitans that you can afford to buy in a five or above. That I've got another mitigation that when you relax buying in good schools, that there's a mitigator. So we started in Norcross, bought one in Roswell, a cheap house, same price, right off Holcomb Bridge, close to 400. We then got into 2 years worth of buying double wides on land. We discovered, like blindfolded urbanites, that once you leave a certain distance from an urban center, 80% of the inventory are double wides on land, not including the mobile home parks, which I ended up buying a fifth of some years later, but double wides on land are everywhere outside. And that's standard blue collar housing. We didn't realize that until they started showing up on HUD Home Store. And Georgia was unique in the country where they were running through foreclosure. We don't know why there weren't many foreclosed double wides in other states. And so we ended up buying about 18 of those things and using the Wendy Patton model of rent to own as a way to skim off higher quality tenants, tenant buyers in each area with the goal to put them in a contract for deed after a year of dating, date before marriage. So we, and plus long-term capital gains, plus selling an investment property qualifies you to get installment sale tax treatment as opposed to selling inventory, which is buy, fix, sell, seller finance. You don't, you know, at least in my view, you don't qualify for installment sale. So for 2 years, we bought double wides, and then they ran out in 2015. And we circled back to buying stick-built houses, regular houses. Bought some in small towns, Stockbridge, but the whole bunch up near Chattanooga in Rossville, Ringgold. We discovered there's a pocket of undiscovered houses that are leveraging the huge jobs engine of Chattanooga. I love Chattanooga. Chattanooga has so many jobs. They have 3 auto plants, a VW plant that's exploding even today. They're converting their VW plant up in Chattanooga to their electric car manufacturing. So, but all the foreclosures ran out in Rossville, Ringgold, just in Chattanooga. So no more. So it's very difficult to find good deals. So yeah, we bought a bunch up there while the going was good. And then that took us to about 2018, 19, and had a dry spell, or a taking it easy spell, I suppose. By that point, we had around 35, 6, 7 doors, some in contract for deed, mostly standard rental, and then started doing subject twos, trained myself on subject two by taking some a weekend education from a local educator, and I got a good document set for subject two. It's a very complicated deal. Buying them to keep. I don't do wraps and sell subject twos. I keep them for rental. So I did 2 of them in the last 8 months, one in Rossville, one in Rex, which isn't the east side of Clayton, very nice houses that I picked up just by, you know, nothing for to the seller in Rex and $2,000 so that the occupants could put a security deposit down on a rental they wanted. So that's now my current gig is marketing for subject twos, but they leverage off those deal sellers are sitting tight right now. They aren't motivated to sell because of forbearance and foreclosure ban due to the CARES Act. So I've only done 2 of those deals recently.
I think it's pretty interesting that you have kind of changed strategies as the market progresses, changed areas. I think there's a big lesson in there that you need to remain flexible as you invest and always keep your eyes open for the next opportunity. And if you stop learning, then you know you're going to run into some problems, because if you're a one-trick pony, then you're just going to be stuck doing the same thing over and over again. And then that at some point is going to run its course. How do you think about your, it seems to me you're kind of a, you said you're a saver, and then now I kind of think of that in light of your rental portfolio. My guess is you're just an accumulator, right? Like you might sell one or two every now and then, but you're more interested in growing and accumulating those over time. Even, would you say even in this hot market? Tell us a little bit about how you think about that.
Right. So if you would take our age and categorize us in one of 3 buckets: starter, maintainer, ender. Enders should be annuitizing or selling their inventories, winnowing down the amount of work. We are not doing what we should be doing based on our age. So what are we doing? We're selling on notes houses that are further away or more difficult to manage. 1 or 2 for cash, the real dogs. So the paper that I wrote that Spencer found me is how to buy a bulletproof rental portfolio. It's a file linked off my Bigger Pockets profile, first paragraph. And one of the focuses of that paper is how to choose your tenant, then the house type. And we ended up buying some houses that were great houses, great prices, and we thought were in great areas. But we actually didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know that rentals run on the backs of local jobs. And we didn't understand that Franklin County, where Toccoa, Georgia is located, is dirt poor. There is no jobs up there. And if you lose a job, it's very difficult to find another job. And there's a lot of counties in Georgia that are dirt poor. We bought a house in Albany. It's called Albany, actually. And a beautiful house. couldn't keep it rented. Albany is dirt poor. And then we bought some other houses in these small towns and they didn't have the job. So that was an expensive lesson. And we ended up selling those houses for either cash or on notes to local investors, because those houses can work as rentals, but it's the business model where you got to collect rent face to face and sometimes with a pistol in your pocket. Right. And that's not us. We do rent to own of nicer houses, and we couldn't find anyone who even knew what rent to own was or wanted to own a house because it just had low aspirations. Another key in our business is that we buy fantastic houses. We just buy okay houses in okay neighborhoods and we fix them nicer. We don't spend a fortune. We just do a few nice things to them, like put Italian pendants over the sink. That's a $45 decision, and appeal to aspirational tenants who view themselves in 5 years to be in a better place, living in this nice home in a nice neighborhood and raising a family. So aspirational tenants will never call you. They'll fix stuff. They'll pay the rent on time. And so when you know who you're after, your job is not to buy houses and look for tenants. Your job is to choose your tenant, and then you buy houses to suit your tenants' needs. And after we learned that, it's Rossville, south of Chattanooga, that was all about blue collar and is fixing houses nicely that the blue collar tenants wanted up there. And so I never hear from those guys. The houses stay fixed, no German roaches, and it's a Maytag repairman management job.
That's great. That's a great story. Tell us about your decision to go full-time real estate investor. Did you have like a goal in mind, and what was that goal? We have a lot of people that listen that I would bet would love to be a full-time real estate entrepreneur, but what's the point when it's safe to cross over into full-time?
Yeah. So that's again where we're unique, and it's hard to replicate when you have only one person working on investing and you have usually the wife who's full-time mom, or she has a job, but not making as much, and she's not working the business. That we had the luxury of both me and my wife going full bore, and she was part of the business. And the math was not mathematical. It was just a gut feel. Do we have enough net income from these rentals that I could quit? And I didn't have a goal. I didn't have some say, because the tax advantages, if your W-2 job netted, let's say, $5,000 a month, that if you had $5,000 or $6,000 coming in passively from rentals, net of major expenses, that you can quit. And that's true. But the disadvantage that is well talked about, it's not hidden, is that once you quit, you are unbankable. It's hard to borrow money. And something no one talks about is that depending on your personality, you can actually start feeling poor. And sleep well at night can become a factor. If you feel poor and you feel that your flexibility is hindered because you don't have enough income, or you're not bankable, not this, not that. Because if you quit too soon with too tight of an income versus your expenses, you actually are. Your reserves tend to be low, and your ability to grow reserves if you have an event that eats two ACs and a roof in one season, and your reserves are down to $2,000 or $3,000, you might not sleep very well. So because we just worked our butts off, and we ended up with a net income of about twice what certainly my income and maybe our combined income from passive income. And at that point, we just had one more loan to get, and I had to be an employee the day of that loan closing. And the loan closing date was on the calendar. I went into my boss and I said, "Johnny, paycheck day, I quit." And so I absolutely hate the word retired, because I'm not retired. And I didn't retire. I quit.
Right. You're still working, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm still working. Yeah. I was at a rental today, and I just went through a rehab, not so much from hell, but I do it to myself. I squeezed the full rehab into 2.5 weeks. And that's, nice. You know, with a handyman shortage. And I was very lucky that I got a painter by pulling in some Karma chips. He's been painting for me in the area, and he lives in the neighborhood, and he rearranged things. And I discovered a new flooring outfit. Sherwin-Williams Flooring has a division who's been doing flip houses and new builds for all along, but Sherwin-Williams Flooring really hasn't become known in the rental rehabber circles. And their prices for LTV, including removal of carpet, putting in LVT, and quarter round, is around $350 to $375 a square foot, all said and done. $375, including the quarter round, is insane. And it's good LVT. And I got those guys in because I scheduled them out because I knew this tenant was leaving. And before they left, I had all these schedules because I instinctively do these things. It's not that I'm organized or have systematized. My brain is failing because that the thing that my wife was worrying about of running over the edge of physical and mental capacity near the curve is happening. But I still managed to get this thing done in 2.5 weeks. And man, I'm tired. And then German roaches just wouldn't go away. And tenants are moving in, and they're calling me this morning.
Yeah, the light, German the life roaches of a landlord crawling right there.
Right, right. Oh my God! My wife and I got in the car. I had a sprayer. I had glue boards. I had the whole nine yards. And I bought McDonald's hamburgers to put in a little cup in the center of this cardboard, surrounded by glue boards. And that was the litmus test for how many bugs are coming out per day.
Oh gosh. Oh, my word.
Plus, I added a little more spray. And they still weren't happy. Of course, they're not happy. It's just, they're just livid. They're more frustrated than mad. And of course, I'm mortified because I do good product.
I think German roaches is a great place to end it. Kurt, great job. Love catching up.
Hey, Kurt, if people want to get in touch with you, everybody who's listening, we're going to leave Kurt's information in the show notes, but you can also reach him. His number is 678-948-7151, and his email is csmith@javadeport. Is that right?
Depot. Yeah.
I'm sitting here trying to read this. Javadepot. Gotcha. .com.
Yeah.
All right. Kurt, thanks for being on the show with us. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. And thanks, guys, for having just a great outfit and trying to help folks with all your good info. You guys take care.
Absolutely. So listen, if you are listening to this for the first time, go ahead and share it with some friends and subscribe to this podcast. And we will be back next week with another episode. Talk to you soon.